95.3 The Score has a free app at 95.3thescore.com. Log on and put it on your smart device today.
I hope you're ready. It's that time. Climb aboard, all aboard, for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I can't take it anymore.
I am losing my mind.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
I know that, dude.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
Alex is sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about?
I would have Mariota out at 3 in the morning drunk, pawning his Heisman Trophy to get into an illegal poker house.
And now, a guy with lots of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
No, I mean, like, lots of issues.
Shut up and get on with the program. Dude is a snot.
And broadcasting them, searching for answer.
Who is this?
It's Steve Tannen.
Have another donut, you fat pig.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Julie, hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on, I know you can hear me. Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Oh, yeah, it is. Oh, yeah.
Tannenism.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. 5 o'clock hour. It's hump day. It's Wednesday. You did it. And good for you. Well done. Goody two shoes for you. Blee, blah, blee, blah, blue. So, you knew coming into work today, if you follow sports, that there's going to be a lot of fallout from that brawl at Fog Allen Fieldhouse last night between the Kansas schools. And then normally as you go through the course of a day, you could anticipate chat when the Hall of Fame class was announced yesterday. Remember, it was 3 o'clock our time, 6 o'clock on the East Coast. So all the morning shows in the major sports cities, baseball cities, would be talking about Derek Jeter and Larry Walker being elected into baseball's Hall of Fame. Then the day kind of goes through the motions, and Eli Manning announces, after 16 seasons in the NFL, he's retiring, which I'm really happy. And by that, I mean, hate to see Eli go, love 10, but he wasn't going to start for the Giants. And I don't think it's really realistic for a franchise to think, oh man, if we just plug in Eli Manning, after the way he's played when he's had the opportunity the last couple of years, well, that's our ticket to the big time. No. And, you know, let's be realistic, coming from his family and the kind of cabbage he's made as a, you know, a multi-decade starter for the New York Football Giants. I mean, he's not a guy who's like, oh my God, if I don't work next year, car payments, E-Web bill, you know, stuff like that. And to see him in another uniform kind of as a Klingon, some of the discomfort we sports fans have seen, whether it's Patrick Ewing in a Seattle uniform, Namath in a Rams jersey, Johnny Unitas in a Chargers jersey. You know, the truth is, very few longtime Hall of Famers make the switch, and then have even a modicum of success. You know who really pulled it off was Favre. I mean, he left.
Peyton Manning's the answer.
But he wasn't great. He got a really good situation. Remember, when they won the Super Bowl, he was kind of noodle arm. Year they lost to the Seahawks, he was great.
Well, yeah, he was.
He's on the list. He's on the list.
I would say he tops the list. He won the Super Bowl with a second team, which is something Favre didn't do.
Okay.
He got as far as the NFC Championship game. Still kind of a big deal.
Didn't he make two Super Bowls with Denver?
What, Manning?
Yeah.
I was saying Favre, you know, he only got to the conference championship game.
That's why I put
Manning ahead of
Minnesota.
Him.
I'm actually trying to think. I mean, Let's put it this way. There is a big minefield of guys who thought they had something left, like Emmitt Smith, and wound up worse than they had been their last year with the franchise that they became a Hall of Famer with. And there's like four examples of guys who had success with Team 2.
Jerry Rice did it.
Jerry Rice got
to
a Super Bowl.
Three.
Got to a Super... What'd you say?
He played for the Raiders, and then he played for the Seahawks.
Yeah, but he didn't make a Super Bowl. He made the Super Bowl with the Raiders of the Raiders in 2002. But, and I'm sure there are Brady fans out there who think, well, if they're parting ways and he goes to, well, what's the common landing point? San Diego or something like that?
San Diego's not a franchise, Steve. That's a dollar.
You know what I mean. I actually think we saw the decline of Brady this year. You know, not that he stinks or he's a bum or he should have gotten benched or they had a better option, but he did not look like, you know, the GOAT. Especially, he did not, after beating Washington, who's obviously a crappy team, he only had one game the rest of the year where he rated over 90 as a quarterback. I mean, this is Tom freaking Brady. I mean, he ended up on the season after five games. He had 10 touchdown passes. He had 14 the rest of the way. It's Tom Brady we're talking about.
This is what I was trying to tell you about 2-3 weeks ago when you said he couldn't possibly leave, right? And I said, kind of.
I think he'd retire before he left. Is he really going to play at his age for another franchise?
This is what Belichick, and I think, is going to be able to convince Kraft that Brady doesn't have it anymore. And if we keep him here, the window that we have with our great defense is certainly going to come, is going to shut down. Because, you know, you give that Patriots defense a second chance against Lamar Jackson in the next round, assuming they would have beaten Tennessee. I think that they probably had just as good of a chance to have a rematch of the AFC Championship game against Kansas City, and that would have been a whole lot of fun just because the defense was that good. But the offense only needed to score 21 points to get past Tennessee, and they couldn't do it.
No.
It stuffed at the goal line like five times, which is just a whole other thing that, you know, the play calling, what's going on, and they're really trying to force the pass too much. Why aren't you just handing the ball off to Sony Michel four times or whatever? Like, pick up a yard, do the QB sneak thing with Brady. I think Belichick might be able to say, we've kind of lost it. Our best chance to win right now is to not have Tom Brady, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah, it's been from 15 to 16, 16 to 17, 17 to 18, 18 to this year, his yards per game has gone down. And the last 3 years, his quarterback rating has gone down. I mean, there's no more bold on his pro reference page. It's all... And when you consider their lack of a running game, I mean, he had more attempts this year than he has in the last half decade, but his yards were down noticeably from 15, 17, and 18. I mean, and I'm sorry, I know he's all into TB12 and the stretching and the nutrition and everything, but there's no place on the label, can't prevent next year from coming. I mean, he's going to be 43 when the season starts. And his completion rate is also at a low we haven't seen since, well, 2013, he was about the same. Otherwise, this is the lowest since he hit his 30s. And what has been the common trap of NFL fans and media over the last 5 years? Oh, you don't want to be the one to throw dirt on his grave. And I don't want to be either, but a steady decline, 43. I put it to you this way. The most staunch Brady supporter, do you really see him going out there next year and being one of the league's best quarterbacks, one of the league's best eight quarterbacks, the top 20? There's 32 starting quarterbacks. We know that there's seven or eight who should be in another profession. So put him in even the top third of the decent quarterbacks. I don't know how real. I mean, he ain't going to be Mahomes. We know that.
But that's the thing is, like, Tom Brady this year was still a top 10 quarterback, kind like maybe in that
ish.
10, you know, the 9 right. through 13 range or whatever.
But for them to win, doesn't he have to be like top 3?
Kind of. Well, not really, because they almost did it this year and he was very, like, okay. But the problem is like, the uptick isn't going to come as he hits 43-44. Tom Brady is going to think that the uptick is coming. Give me another couple years. Give me one more big payday before I retire. Like, I think some team is going to throw dumb money at him to be like, look, we'll give you the third year that we know no other team is going to offer you. And we're going to.
You think he'll get more than a 1 year guarantee?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I read an article from a guy in The Athletic, and he's like, there are teams out there that have so much cap space and so much dumb money to throw around that they would be like, yeah, let's push $15, $20 million at Tom Brady for 2-3 years, and let's see if he will commit to the money to be able to prove that he's the one who had all this success. It wasn't Belichick.
What if he goes back and goes to Indy and starts ahead of Jacoby Brissett with a decent defense, some arsenal.
Yeah.
Like, playing inside.
That would probably be important to him. I think another one is Miami have a ton of dumb cap space to play with. Tampa Bay probably moving. We're doing the quarterback show again that we've done like for the last 3 months.
It just morphs into it.
Yeah, well, Tampa Bay is probably going to move away from Jameis Winston, you would think. And they have incredible weapons on offense, a pretty okay running game, and really a defense that's, you know, good enough. I mean, if you have just a halfway competent quarterback that turns the ball over instead of Jameis Winston's 30 interceptions, just, you know, 20, which is still not good, but 10 more possessions that, you know, you could possibly put up points in, like, that team could have won the NFC South. You're playing most of your games in the sunshine of Tampa Bay. You've got two divisional teams that have domes, so those games are indoors as well. It kind of makes sense. Like, I think the leaving door is ajar for Brady.
I can't wrap my brain around it. Maybe I need a couple weeks to just let things settle in, get through the Super Bowl, March Madness, and then to think about Brady in another uniform.
The other thing is his house is on the market in the Boston area. Never a good sign when you're selling your home, especially when you're Tom Brady and also his wife makes a lot of money. And it's not just like, we're selling one of our Boston area homes. No, they're selling the Boston home, not just any of their other 19 homes. And another interesting storyline is Felipe Rios of the San Diego Los Angeles Clipper Chargers is moving across the country to Florida. Like, this is a guy who kept his family in San Diego, hired a driver and bought a van to drive him to and from San Diego and LA for practices so that he could study film and, like, while he was driving and commuting stuck in traffic, because he didn't want to move his family an hour north. And he's moving completely across the country. He's not coming back to LA.
I think there's kind of a deal where we're not having you back. I'm not coming back. Yeah, we know. Whatever. I'll see you
mutually
later.
Mutually parting ways of the thing.
All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Somebody does ask a legit question about how much does the arsenal around Brady impact, not only if they decide to bring him back, but, you know, remember, he did lose Gronk. Sony Michel, good. You know, they have that serviceable backfield with he and White and Burkhead. You know, Edelman with 100 catches. No other wide receiver with more than 30. You know, they made the move to get Sanu. Josh Gordon came in and, of course, decided, I got an idea. Let's go to the dispensary and buy about 16 grams of Blue Moon Green or whatever the hell they got. So will they anticipate N'Keal Harry being an upgrade? Edelman turns 34. So it's going to be interesting to follow to see if, in fact, this incredible marriage for the better part of two decades, which has had unprecedented success, is going to part mutually, or will it come apart at the seams? I'll tell you what, I was looking at the final stat sheet for the NFL season and just how things change on a dime from year to year, which is kind of along the lines of what we're seeing, especially in a game where injuries in a violent collision-oriented game make their impact. I mean, I was talking about, the Niners and Kansas City and Tennessee, how not coincidentally they were three of the four last standing. They were also the healthiest teams in the NFL. I mean, here's a question. Who led the league in passing yards? Not this year, last year. Hint. It plays into right what I'm saying. He missed most of this year injured. And, it was Ben Roethlisberger. And who led the league in passing yards this year? Hint. He set a record that is also infamous. And you just mentioned him. Yeah. Ben Roethlisberger last year had 5,100 yards throwing. This year, Jameis Winston, 5,100 yards throwing. A year ago, Pat Mahomes was the only quarterback in the NFL that had more than 40 touchdown throws. And he had 50. He led by 11. And you know who was second in TD passes last year? Hint, he retired. Andrew Luck. And I'm telling you look at the number comparison, and it's like, in a year, how much changes? And that really doesn't happen in baseball and the NBA or the NHL. For example, this year, Lamar Jackson led the NFL with just 36 touchdown passes, and he also led yards per attempt, completion, and, it's kind of interesting. Even though neither played a full season, check what I just said. It's an important statistic. Yards per attempt, yards per completion. Last year it was Ryan Fitzpatrick. And this year it was Ryan Tannehill. It's insane. And remember when the NFL quit having running backs?
Yes.
Well, do you remember who led the NFL in rushing? Not this past season, but the year before that. I'll give you a hint. He had a really good year again this year because he's really good. Yes. Zeke Elliott, good one. And then it was Saquon Barkley who had, Elliott had over 1,400, Barkley just over 13, then Todd Gurley. And then this year, of course, we talked about it, Derrick Henry had more than 1,500 yards. I didn't realize Nick Chubb of the Browns was second in the NFL in rushing this year. He had almost 1,500 yards. He had a big year.
He was the leader in the NFL going into the afternoon games. And Derrick Henry broke off a
9,000 yards.
Right. He, carried 19 people 53 yards to literally took away the title.
The rushing title. And then you had Christian McCaffrey, who's third. Last year's champ, Zeke Elliott, was fourth. And I'll tell you what. This year, the NFL had 16,000-yard runners, and I'll tell you what, last year, nine in 2017, 12, just 7 in 2015. That's kind of the years they were like, let's just throw the ball. 13 in 2014, including Eddie Lacy. In 2012... the guys who rushed for 1,000 yards, how about this? 2013, excuse me. Reggie Bush, Chris Johnson, Knowshon Moreno. It doesn't seem like that long ago, but in football years, it just accelerates.
Wasn't Knowshon Moreno just crying the world's biggest tears during the national anthem like 2 years ago?
It seems like that, but I'll tell you what. You got to go back to 2012 to find the plethora of 1,000-yard rushers we had this year. And in 2012, which again doesn't seem like that long ago, some of the 1,000-yard runners, Arian Foster, Stephen Ridley of the Patriots, the law firm, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, and former Oregon Stater, Stephen Jackson. So like I said, you got to keep an eye out. And for fantasy players, man, it's got to be a pain in the neck because it's like there's going to be a turnover like year to year that's nuts at the production positions.
Yeah, no, that's why getting a high draft pick and being able to get Saquon, Zeke, Christian McCaffrey, kind of Alvin Kamara, although he was kind of like a ghost September through October, it's very important to get those positions because if you have a guy rushing for 1,000 yards over the course of 16 games, he's putting up 10, 15 points up for your right. team every single week. Like, you need that production. And if you can, you know, then take a bunch of flyers on a bunch of random guys in the middle rounds, and eventually you'll kind of get lucky, but you need that guarantee at the top is very important.
Absolutely, especially because there's like four other guarantees at that position, and then somebody falls off the map and some pain in the neck second year guy like Mostert comes along and all of a sudden wrecks everything.
Well, and Mostert didn't come around until December, and by then the playoffs had happened and you were probably worrying about not finishing in last place.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Bring in Mike. Mike, how's it going?
Hey, good. How are you guys doing today?
All righty, what's up?
Hey, I saw the, I don't know, I caught that game last night with Kansas State, that melee.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit surprised at the disciplinary action. I think it's a little bit light, to be quite honest with you, from what I saw. It, 12 games. I just don't get it. I'm surprised that kid's going to wear a Kansas uniform again.
I am, too. The still shot of him with a chair over his head where you could literally kill somebody should have been like, all right, we're going to part ways now, pal.
Yeah, he threw a couple of haymakers in there, too. I know the kid from Kansas State that wasn't dressed that got in there, but that kid, D'Souza, did throw some punches, and then those other dudes were kicking some dude against the wall, and they got, what, 3 or 4 games?
Yeah, there was a 2-gamer, a 4-gamer, and I forgot. I mean, after the 12. But, you know, what also gets lost is the guy who stole the ball with 3 seconds to go. He didn't commit any violation, but the whole thing is DeJuan Gordon's fault. If he just counted down 3, 2, 1, they all shake hands, go home, and nothing happens.
Yeah. But, you know, I think it almost reflects to me like they're trying – the Big 12's kind of protecting. I mean, they can't. They're concerned. They don't want to lose Kansas as one of their number 1 or 2, 3 seeds, you know. So I think that's what it comes across to me. I mean, LeGarrette Blount threw one punch. And I know it was a better punch than any of those guys threw, and he was done for the entire season. So, you know, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, there's also a difference between pro and college. One is represented by a union, so... Oh, no, wait, what am I saying? You said LeGarrette Blount. Never mind. I heard something different. My bad. Good point, Mike.
I was wondering before tomorrow night's game, the Ducks play at home tomorrow night against what, USC or UCLA? I can't remember.
USC.
I was wondering if they're thinking about sacrificing a live chicken for Anthony Mathis to break his shooting head.
All right. I'm not responsible for that. I'm a vegetarian, but if you could work it out, Mike, I've got no problem.
Right on. You guys have a good one.
All right. Take it easy. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. One call before a break. Bring in Ken. Ken, good afternoon. How's it going?
Great, Steve. How are you?
What's up?
So I saw the indefinite suspension today. I put indefinite in air quotes. Just because, is this indefinite, kind of like Grayson Allen 2 years ago for Duke? I mean, is this Sosa guy going to be indefinitely suspended until Kansas needs to keep their number one seed and their top line record for the tournament?
Well, first of all, Ken, he got suspended. They intervened. The conference said 12 games. And the problem with D'Souza is everybody hears his name. It's familiar. He didn't play that much. He's a bench guy. He's a scrub. He's their ninth guy. It's not going to make that big of an impact on how Kansas' season goes. He only averages about 10 minutes a game.
It seems like there's some different rules in play for different programs. I mean, a few years ago, the guy from Duke who did it, you know, the indefinite suspension turned into 2 games and all this kind of stuff. I just think it's kind of crap. These guys throwing chairs, doing stuff, and just because they're the big-name programs, they play by different rules everywhere else.
Yeah, this is on Kansas. This is on self and the AD to say, you know what, And it would be easy to do, like I said. The guy's averaging 3 points a game and three rebounds. He plays an average of about 8 minutes a game. It'd be like, wow, we could have our cake and eat it. We could not really hurt our chances to make a Final Four run, and we could show that we're not going to put up with this and just dump him from the team. So I think they blew an opportunity.
I agree with you. Thanks, Liz.
All right, take it easy. Yeah, for anybody who's wondering, you know, who this guy is or familiar with his name, he's an okay player. I mean, he plays for Kansas. He hits 52% from the line. He's not that good a shooter. He doesn't take threes. And like I said, he's playing 8 minutes a game. He's averaging 3 points a game. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. By the way, real quick, LeGarrette Blount got suspended indefinitely. But if you remember, about midway through the season, Chip Kelly offered him what he called the ladders to return, but I don't think he came back until the Civil War, although he was eligible. And I always thought that Chip made the right move, because unlike certain other coaches and programs that allow a guy to get away with more or bring a guy back, remember, at that time, the Ducks figured it out. They found LaMichael James. They didn't need help at running back. They were en route to winning the conference. So he did it because he was offering a young guy who did something really stupid in the heat of the moment, punched him, and, you know, you always wonder, if that wasn't the nationally televised game, would there have been that big of an uproar? Yeah, you want to frown on a guy cold cocking another guy for tapping him on the shoulder and saying, so where's that ass whooping you promised us? Because the answer was kind of like, here. All right, so we'll take a break. We'll be back with an update and more sports talk. 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Ducks will inbound out of the timeout. Six on the shot clock now. Pritchard takes a long three. It's good. What a shot from Pritchard. Tie game at 54. Richardson to Lawson near the free throw line. Puts it on the floor. Hands it to Pritchard. Four on the shot clock. Pritchard going to have to put up a shot. Fades away and makes it. Peyton Pritchard. What a shot.
I just wanted to kind of hear that again. I don't usually do that. That was a highlight for me. All right.
You do that all the time.
Yeah, I also play Misery.
It being your show, you get to decide what you do. I think technically you
pick
all of your cuts. Yeah,
all of a sudden now I decide. Good one, Nick.
Just saying, it's the dots are out there to be connected.
Occasionally. All right. Welcome back to Sports Talk on 19.
Wow.
It's not even the 1900s. I'm like more than 20 years late. I'll catch up. Again, it's my show. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. So I really wanted to get to a little bit of, because it's my show, Eli Manning.
More content for Steve.
Certain organizations, would you say, have a clear number one? Best player ever in the history of the pick a franchise. With the Giants of the past, for a generation even older than me, you might have had Frank Gifford or Rosie Brown. But for the New York Football Giants, the greatest ever is Lawrence Taylor. I say the hunt for number two comes down to those guys, maybe Harry Carson, Michael Strahan, and Eli Manning. Because the quarterback for historians for the pre-me Giants, who won and competed for some titles, was a fellow by the name of Chuck and Charlie Connerly. But he's just not an all-timer. Manning, of the Eli variety, obviously the consummate pro. Pretty big shadow. I mean, Peyton. And Big Bro, number 18, was drafted in 1998. Excuse me. By the time Eli was taken in 2004, Peyton was an established star. The league was pretty much run by Brady, Favre, and Peyton. And while statistically Eli Manning isn't going to dive off the page and smack in the head, he's just always going to have that special meaning to Big Blue fans. Because there was a very long dry spell that ended with the 1986 team. The Giants made the NFL championship game. I think it was 1963. They lost to the Bears. And they went through a down period. They contended for a half hour in 1970. Then they made the playoffs LT's rookie year in 81, slipped a little bit, fired Ray Perkins, and hired this guy named Parcells. And in 84 and 85, they lost to two powerhouse teams in the divisional round. They got beat by the Niners and the 85 Bears. 86 came around. They got their first Super Bowl win. Phil Simms of CBS broadcaster fame to many of you. Then Simms got hurt in 90 when I think they were 10-1. But they leaned on the defense with LT, the line with Bart Oates, Doug Riesenberg, Bob Cratch, a young William Roberts. And they beat the Niners at Candlestick. I'm pretty sure that was the last playoff game that Montana ever played for San Francisco. Leonard Marshall chased him down, buried him in the turf, broke his thumb, and they kicked a late field goal, win it 15-13, beat Frisco at Candlestick for the NFC title without scoring a touchdown. They faced the Bills. Not many people gave them a chance. That Bill offense, the red gun, that defense with Bruce Smith and Darrell Talley and Cornelius Bennett was fantastic. And Giants looked outmatched. And they had Jeff Hostetler, their backup quarterback, who threw a touchdown to a guy named Stephen Baker, whose nickname was Stephen Baker the Touchdown Maker, except in the NFL he didn't make many touchdowns. But he made a big one there. And in the second half, they kept the unstoppable red gun offense off the field, found the end zone, ran Otis Anderson, held Buffalo just far enough out on that last drive for Norwood to go wide right. Fast forward, that was it. You get through the 90s. They had the Super Bowl team of 2000. I to this day, I have no idea how they won the NFC with Kerry Collins. But then the Ravens kicked crap out of them. They drafted Eli, put him in there. When Kurt Warner was old and ineffective, little do we know, Warner 4 years later would almost win a Super Bowl with Arizona. And Eli led those absolutely ridiculous playoff runs. Remember, they derailed the perfect Pats after 07. That highlight, you all know, Tyree catching it with his head. The touchdown ensuing to Plaxico Burress before he shot himself in the thigh. Then in 2011, they won a crappy East, kind of like this year, at 9-7. They suffocated the Fail Clowns on Wild Card Weekend. The only points Atlanta scored were on a safety. Then he outgunned Aaron Rodgers at Lambeau. Then they went to Candlestick and beat Frisco again in overtime. And then they beat the Patriots again. So more, well, Manning always get a lot of sentimental love just because he beat the stinking Patriots twice. And if they had won eight, we'd never hear the freaking end of it. But I think Eli will end up in Canton. There will be some naysayers, but he's always going to be an icon among New York sports fans for be it his class, his durability, his professionalism, the way he always repped the city. I don't know. Do I need an Eli shirt now? Just a little honor, an honorary purchase.
You had 15 years to get a T-shirt, and you wait until he retires to think I need an Eli shirt.
I never felt I needed one. I still haven't worn my Danny Dimes T-shirt that my kids got me because the deal was once I got it, he got injured. Then he came back, and I was like, I can't wear it till they win a game, and they didn't.
They didn't? Didn't they beat Washington in overtime?
Are you sure?
To end the season? Yeah, I think, right?
Well, it was the last game of the season. So I couldn't wear it until...
You could have worn it. I've worn a Falcons sweatshirt and a hat like around here like 9 times since they've been eliminated.
No, you're not as superstitious as me.
Oh, okay.
All right, yeah, they did win it, and then I decided, oh, did he play in that game?
Yeah.
No, there was a reason I decided to wait until next year.
All right.
So that was kind of the deal.
What's the deal?
By the way, here's a good one.
Tannenism.
As a West Virginia Mountaineer, I believe suspending the starters for the rest of the season is due. Well, anyway, he suspended the nincompoop D'Souza for Kansas until the last regular season game. I think I said it was against Texas Tech. But anyway, that's where that goes. I think you could make a case that Eli is a top five Giant, maybe go as high as number two. But like for a more modern generation, like for the 40-something and under crowd, greatest Patriot, duh. Greatest Buffalo Bill, I mean, would that be Bruce Smith? Would it be Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas, three Hall of Famers? Greatest Jet, there are none. Probably Curtis Martin is a Hall of Famer. Greatest Dolphins, Marino. Greatest Baltimore Raven is Ray Lewis. Greatest Steeler since the Steel Curtain. Is that Roethlisberger? Is it Polamalu? Greatest Brown, none. Greatest Bengal, none. We're not allowing him. Greatest.
You're so mean.
I know. Indianapolis Colt, obviously, is Peyton. Greatest Jacksonville Jaguar, none. Maybe Fred Taylor. Who's the greatest chief of your generation? Yeah, none. Probably Mahomes already.
They had a couple fun. Was it Priest Holmes? They had a good stretch of like really exciting running backs.
Yeah.
All right.
Greatest Eagle, probably Donovan. Greatest Cowboy of modern era. It's still modern enough to do the big three of Troy, Michael, and Emmett. Greatest Washington, none. Greatest Packers, obviously. Oh, it's Favre. Greatest Viking, whatever. Greatest Bear, probably Urlacher. Greatest Lion, none. Greatest Saint, Breeze.
Let's not dismiss Calvin Johnson like that.
I did. That was bad. By the way, somebody said Greatest Chief might be Derek Thomas. All right. I stand corrected, and I stand corrected with you, and you know how much that pains me.
It's like the fourth time today, too. You've been wrong about like a couple things that I got
actually,
right.
I haven't been wrong. I've just been pain in the ass, dismissive, not willing to listen to logic or evidence.
And I've brought a lot of logic and evidence today, which is unlike me.
Who's the greatest Seahawk?
Jerry Rice.
By the way, you're a lot of help.
Russell
Russ
Wilson
now?
Russ has put in probably a very good
case. Has the 8 years or 7 years with a Super Bowl and another one put him past like Sean Alexander, Steve Largent, and
Steve Largent modern?
Nah.
Because you get into the mid to late 80s to kind of early 90s. Like, you're talking about like 30
last
years
year
ago.
Was 30 years ago.
Okay. I don't know. That's pushing it. I would say, and I still think a lot of like Seahawks fans from back
oh, right
in those
now?
Days,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, would still say Russ. Then second and third would maybe be Sean Alexander, maybe Steve Largent. Marshawn Lynch was.
But I'll tell you one
big
thing.
Big time fan favorite there.
Yeah, fan favorite, but. Boy, with he and Alexander, it was like, they're great, they're done.
It's every good running back.
Sean Alexander went from MVP to okay to, did he ever even play? Is there video evidence that he was actually a running back?
I think he set the touchdown record, and then it got, broken like the next year by another nobody? And then both of them disappeared off the face of the earth.
Somebody just cast a ballot for Cam Chancellor.
Interesting. See, now it's
Earl Thomas and he, I say, in the running among the top three or four greatest safety tandems I ever saw.
Now it's just Seahawk fans listing their favorite Seahawks.
Right. And that's when it gets away, and that's when we say, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with the tweet of the day.
Oh, wait.
And,
oh, you were serious. Oh, I have to get rid of it. Okay.
And the home stretch of a Wednesday next, 95.3 The Score.
And now, it's the Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day.
They are trending, twittering, tweeting, you name it.
On Sports Talk with Steve Tannen.
LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my God, WTF, why the face?
Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Doc Nip.
Hi, host Steve. Nick Rogers here at the Coors Light Frostbird Sports Desk for the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Coors Light Mountain Cold Refreshment that is made to chill. This is from yesterday, and I think I broke the rules a couple days ago on the Tweet of the Day. I'm not going to do it again, but it has to do with Las Vegas announcing that the draft stage will be on a float inside the pool at the Bellagio with the fountains and everything. It's going to be the most Vegas thing ever. As the Las Vegas Raiders, or the Oakland Raiders, officially died, and the Los Angeles Raiders were born today.
Come out the water.
They changed their Twitter handle from Oakland to Las Vegas Raiders. So I think somebody should cannonball into the pool at some point. But Jimmy's Famous Seafood, at Jimmy's Seafood, I can't believe I missed this yesterday, free crab cakes for life to any player that throws Goodell into the water.
Probably not good for that person's career, but that would be a funny as hell moment. Oh, and the roar. By the way, somebody throws Goodell in. You're telling me fans aren't throwing themselves in? I know I would.
Well, yeah. If you get enough, you know, drunk people at an NFL event around a pool in Vegas, I haven't been there. Probably going to be pretty warm. As soon as one person jumps into the pool at the Bellagio, many people are going to start jumping into the pool at the Bellagio. That could be the only time Goodell gets cheered for doing anything in his life, and that would be being thrown into a pool.
He'd be like, wait a minute. You're telling me I could show up at the draft and get cheered, but the third pick in the draft, the big guy, could throw me in? All right, I'll take it. I'm that desperate to be liked.
Yeah, the first guard taken in the draft, you're just going to power block Goodell off the stage into the pool at the Bellagio. Find me later. I think that was the Tack McKinley motto when he swore when he got drafted. He also was a bust. Our tweet of the day is from Roger Sherman, at Roger on Twitter, R-O-D-G-E-R. The Space Jam 2 uniforms were announced today between the Monstars and the Toon Squad. Steve, I know you don't care about this, but this is very important to me. But Roger points something out that's very interesting. Tweeting, am I to understand that the Monstars, a group of alien employees at an amusement park in a faraway galaxy, have an equipment deal with Nike, whose most valuable endorser they are trying to kidnap? Honestly, if I'm LeBron and Nike agrees to outfit the Monstars with high-performance equipment for a game that could result in him getting transported to a foreign galaxy, I'm gonna be pretty pissed. Because, yeah, of course, with LeBron being the Nike athlete, everybody in the movie has to be wearing Nike. So, of course, the Monstars are going to be wearing Nike. But that doesn't make it. Yeah. If you've seen Space Jam, you get it. And that's why at Roger gets our refreshing tweet of the day. I had forgotten Space Jam 2 was happening until I'd seen those jerseys earlier. They look exactly like the old ones, but there's a swoosh on it. So just get the throwback and you'll be fine. Thanks to at Roger for the refreshing tweet of the day. I'm on Twitter at Rick Nodgers. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You'll be able to see our pet of the week on there, Pepe. That's at 953 The Score. Pepe. And Steve is on Twitter at SportsTalk953. Don't be a jerk. Just do it.
Pepe.
JDI.
Tomorrow, we're going to do an in-depth breakdown of each possession of the New Orleans Pelicans with Zion Williamson on the floor. Ooh. No, we're not.
Oh, wait. You sure?
By the way, we're into the second half. Knicks hosting the Lakers. 2-point game. You might want to get to a TV out there. Or not.
No, I'm going to pass again.
I have a feeling that which I really shouldn't be allowed to have anymore, that the Pelicans are going to play an inspired ball game. I honestly really don't care that much. I'm looking forward to seeing him play in the NBA. But, you know, let's just say expectations are limited. The guy had a pretty serious injury, and this is his first game. So tomorrow night, remember, don't you forget, it starts Pac-12 week, and we've got big action here in town. There are four conference games tomorrow. The Pac-12 network starts with Washington, Utah, a couple of teams who need to start winning games if the tournament, beyond winning the conference tournament, is a possibility. Obviously, the Dogs coming off that gut punch loss where they whizzed away a 16-point lead against the Duckies. That's at the Huntsman Center in SLC. Washington State, who had a big win against the Ducks. They're at 500 in league. They're at a very difficult place, the Event Center in Boulder, taking on the Coloradians. And there are two late games, both here in the Valley. That's kind of weird, I guess. USC, Oregon. So I'm going to get off the air at 6, then I guess find something to do for the better part of an hour, then pop back in the studio and bring you Trojans Duck pregame show brought to you by Jerry's Home Improvement Center, then head over to the Stadia. By the way, the odds makers for the second, third, and fourth game, they've got Colorado as a 13-point home favorite against Le Cougars. The books have Oregon a 9-point home chalk with an over-under at 139 against SC. And Oregon State, by the way, UCLA 9-9, 2-3 season one under Mick Cronin, really going through the struggles. Oregon State at 2-4 in conference, lacking more than one quality win. They got to start knocking them dead. So anyway, fun stuff today. Always appreciate you guys. Catch you tomorrow for Crunch Time and Sports Talk, 95.3 The Score.